You're listening to Succeed, Just Let Go, the podcast that'll change how you think and change your life. I'm Willie Horton and I'm a psychologist, been helping people change their lives since 1996, broadcasting from the French Alps, and delighted to have you along. Let's take this week's step in the right direction.
Like many a podcast episode title, the title of this one is not so much misleading as last week's was, but is only half the story. Because actually what this podcast is about, on the one hand, is the things that we do to ourselves. More importantly, on the other, the things that we can do for ourselves. And as it turns out, the things that we can do for ourselves require far less effort, are an awful lot simpler, and a hell of a lot more effective in enabling you enjoy your life in the here and now and enabling you get what you want out of life. Far easier to do things for ourselves than the torture that we inflict upon ourselves on a daily basis when we use our minds, sadly, normally. As is often the case, we'll start this particular episode with a story, or perhaps two or three stories. And indeed, as is often the case, this first particular story comes from one of my face-to-face workshops in Dublin in the dim and distant past. We're visiting again Milltown Golf Club, where I used to do my three-day workshops, which eventually transmuted over time into what is now the Psychology of Success online program. Indeed, there's an awful lot more in the Psychology of Success online program than you would ever fit in a three-day workshop. Even with six people in the room, a three-day intensive face-to-face workshop, you'll get so much more in the online program. And indeed, just to blow the trumpet for the online program for just a moment, online program owners sit down with each other once a fortnight with me on Zoom. And there's hundreds of hours of conversations in the online program that explore some of the things like the story that I want to talk about first in this episode. We're sitting in a semicircle talking about how once you learn to become more focused, everything becomes easier. Or perhaps should I say, once you become properly focused, because most people, as we've discussed before, don't actually understand the meaning of the word focus. Focus is a now thing. It means that I'm paying an unusual amount of attention deliberately to what I'm doing now, to the point that I am immersed in it. Indeed, focus, proper focus, is synonymous with mindfulness. I'm so immersed in the here and now that I'm just doing what I'm doing. I'm not thinking about it. I'm not even thinking about myself and my perhaps perceived inadequacies anymore. So we were talking in Milltown Golf Club about how once you develop your ability, or should I say redevelop your ability, to properly focus in the present moment, everything else becomes so much easier. And one of the people in the group said, but what if you're exhausted? What if you're exhausted when you wake up in the morning? What if you can't get a good night's sleep? And I asked her what was actually happening from a sleep point of view. She said, well, I can't get to sleep, first of all, at night. And then when I do get to sleep, I end up waking up maybe at 3 a.m. in a cold sweat, worrying about anything and everything, nothing in particular. Indeed, if I actually think about it, which is no good thing, by the way, but if I reflect upon it, I've nothing really to worry about, not like some of the other people that I know, or not like some of the people in some of the more difficult parts of the world in which to live. But I wake up in a cold sweat at 3 a.m. and I find it almost impossible to go back asleep. So I'm worrying about anything and everything. All kind of rubbish comes into my head. And if I do get back asleep, I'll waken again a couple of hours later and it'll be a repeat performance. I said to her, you do know the damage that you're doing to yourself by not getting a good night's sleep. Well, she said, I know, I'm exhausted in the morning. I'm not fit to do what I need to do the following day. And it's a vicious circle. I said, well, that's only a small part of the story. Because if we suffer from disrupted sleep, research has shown that the proteins that are implicated in dementia and Alzheimer's will start building up on the surfaces of the synapse of the neural connections in the neural pathways in your brain, even after one or two nights disrupted sleep. To which you replied, obviously, oh, now I'll never get a good night's sleep now that you've really given me something to worry about. The point is that if you're not getting a good night's sleep, not only are you not going to be as effective as you might be the following day, you are actually setting yourself up for long-term mental ill health. And I have to say this as surely as night follows day. So I told her how to get a good night's sleep, regardless of what she thought she might have to worry about. I'm not going to go into it here because I have a really short video on YouTube that is entitled No More Sleepless Nights. And I will put a link to that 5-minute video in the show notes that accompany this episode. But we're doing things to ourselves all of the time as a result of not getting a good night's sleep. Now, I should say, before we go any further, if you are in the kind of habit or rhythm of waking at 4 in the morning, that is not a bad thing because pre-industrial revolution, we humans had two sleeps, first sleep, second sleep, a bit like hobbits, first breakfast, second breakfast. We had two sleeps. So we'd go to bed at sundown and we would wake up maybe at 3 in the morning or 4 in the morning. And we would get up and maybe do a bit of housework or have a cup of tea or a chat or visit neighbors or do other things with one's loved one that one might wish to do at 3 or 4 in the morning. And then we'd go back asleep again and we'd wake at sunrise. We as humans, we as animals, were living in tune with the rhythm of everything going on around us. Then came the satanic mills of the Industrial Revolution, when capitalism demanded that the run of the mill, literally run of the mill, human being had to work basically all the hours God gave them, from first thing in the morning till last thing in the evening. As a result of this, we literally were forced as human beings to change our sleep patterns. So if you are waking up at 4 in the morning, it's only natural, and it may actually mean that you're more tuned in than somebody who's just running straight through the night sleepwise. But we do terrible things to ourselves because I wasn't talking about waking up in the rhythm of things. I was talking about having disrupted sleep as a result of your brain running at 90 miles an hour, or indeed your heart running at 90 miles an hour. I know one particular individual who would wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning and his heart would literally be racing. Now, this guy did have a couple of things to worry about. He had a particularly challenging situation at home at the time, and he knew it was stressing him out. And he was doing his level best to avoid stress. And yet, at 3 or 4 in the morning, he would wake up with his heart racing. He went to his cardiologist because he had a history, or at least his family had a history, of heart disease. And his cardiologist decided to monitor, put a little monitor on him so that he could evaluate what was actually going on at night. Now, here's an aside, and this is a funny aside. It's a crazy aside. It's a normal crazy aside, actually, because I've had conversations with some clients over the last year or two who have told me that they can't get a good night's sleep, that they're waking every hour. On further investigation, I discovered that these people were waking on the hour to check whether their sleep was being disrupted by looking at their Apple Watch or their Fitbit or whatever bit of nonsense they had attached to them. The actual technology was keeping them awake, the technology they were using to try to get a better night's sleep. Whip all that stuff off before you get into bed. Don't sleep with your phone close by, because your phone is receiving airwaves all of the time. How do you think mobile phones ping aerials around the place? Anyway, back to my friend who had his heart monitor put on him. After a week of monitoring, he went back to his cardiologist, who downloaded the information, and his cardiologist said to him, "Oh my God," he said, "for 30 or 40 seconds at a time, your heart is racing at nearly 200 beats a minute." And my friend said to him, "And what would happen if it kept going at that rate for longer than 30 seconds?" He said, "Well, if it kept going at that rate for a couple of minutes, your heart would explode." As I said, the title of this episode, The Things We Do to Ourselves. Now, that client has lived to tell the tale because he took a more concerted approach to deepening his ability to be present and clear in his mind, and in particular before he went to bed at night. That is, by the way, what the video No More Sleepless Nights by Willie Horton on YouTube is actually all about, making sure you go to bed with a clear head. But we do terrible things to ourselves by simply either using our minds normally or, as a result of using our minds normally, enduring things that we should not put up with. Isn't it interesting that if you, for example, Google stress in the workplace, you will find a lot of articles and indeed a lot of courses on resilience training? In other words, how to put up with the stress. Why should you put up with something that you shouldn't have to put up with at all? Or indeed, in the case of stress, why would you put up with something that isn't real? Because stress is something, as we've said on many occasions before, that we do to ourselves. Now, if you want to know more about that, we've discussed that in great detail in one or two episodes of this podcast over the last month or two, actually. But in terms of enduring things that we shouldn't endure, another story from one of my first clients, who about 6 months after he got married fell ill and was diagnosed with an incurable kidney disease. Now, it wasn't, if it was looked after, life-threatening, but if it wasn't looked after, it could indeed end his life prematurely. If you saw himself and his wife together, you'd look at the two of them and say, how do they put up with each other? And yet they put up with each other for 23 years. And for 22 and a half of those 23 years, 6 months after he got married, he developed this illness, he was being treated for this incurable kidney disease. Ultimately, because he was a client of mine, he decided, I'm not going to endure this marriage anymore. And in fact, on the second evening of one of my face-to-face 3-day workshops, went home, packed his bag, and left his wife of 23 years. Now, it was a slightly acrimonious affair for the simple reason that she assumed he was leaving her because he had someone else, was in another relationship. And when he told her it had nothing to do with that, that he just felt that it would be better for the two of them if he left, of course, that was far more hurtful, or at least she thought it was from her perspective. In the end, years later, they would both confirm that it was the best thing that could have happened. Now, the real point of this story is, remember, 6 months after he got married, he was diagnosed with the incurable kidney disease. 6 months after he walked out of his marriage on that Wednesday evening, there was no sign of that kidney disease at all. And he is an entirely healthy and indeed very fit individual at this stage, 25, 26 years later. The things we do to ourselves, either, as I said, by enduring things that we should not put up with, or more normally in the run of things in everyday life, things that we do to ourselves as a result of putting up with the noise in our own heads, putting up with the rubbish that our thinking mind throws in our direction. And it comes in all shapes and sizes, and I mean this literally, because another story from a client many years ago, a girl that both myself and my wife knew was obsessed with losing weight. And rather than using a scales, like any even normal crazy person would do, she could tell whether she was gaining weight or not by seeing, wait for this one, whether her bottom would fit on a dinner plate. Not making this stuff up. She was obsessed with losing weight, and she had broken more dinner plates over the years and only barely avoided serious injury as a result. She had broken so many dinner plates over the years. and never succeeded in losing weight. Now, we know from two episodes ago that you lose weight when you stop thinking about it. Let's explore this for a minute because this is really important. Because, as I said a minute ago, most people endure what their own thinking mind is throwing at them. You lose weight by not thinking about it. In the same way as you get fit by not thinking about it. You know, you could spend the rest of your life thinking about taking up some sport or other. You could spend the rest of your life thinking about going to the gym twice a week. But nothing will happen until you actually stop thinking about it and start doing something about it. Now, it's even cleverer in terms of how many of the people with whom I've worked have lost weight by simply forgetting that they wanted to lose weight. How does that work? Well, it actually works by taking control of your state of mind, as a result of which you stop thinking about anything that is addling you as a result of you putting up with the rubbish that's going on in your own head. The things we do to ourselves. What about the things we can do for ourselves? Well, the first thing you should not do for yourself is go to a therapist. I saw an article in The Guardian or on The Guardian newspaper's website a couple of days ago about somebody who had changed their life by standing up to their inner critic. Now, if even a cursory glance of that article showed that, of course, you know, my inner critic. Of course, there was a therapist involved. A therapist who said, you need to stand up to this person. A person who isn't there. There's only one of you. And the noise in your own head and the rubbish that you put up with as a result of having a dialogue with yourself or an argument with yourself is not real. It's only fueled by thought, it's only fueled by you thinking the thoughts. In other words, paying attention to your thoughts. If you were to stop paying attention to your thoughts, everything would change for the simple reason that, first of all, you realize that the guy or girl who is shouting at you, saying, you can't do this, you can't do that, you know, you're a useless article, that guy or girl doesn't exist. In the same way as stress, as we discussed a few weeks ago, doesn't exist. It's all born out of you paying attention to your thoughts. Now, the problem that we all have as human beings is the brain developed from an evolutionary perspective to enable us to pay attention to our thoughts, because that's what enabled us in evolutionary times, make us through the day whilst being on our guard in case something that would threaten our lives crossed our paths. So we're actually wired to pay attention to our thoughts. We're actually wired, in fact, to still use the automatic pilot that evolved over hundreds of thousands of years. That is why people don't just continue to endure the stuff they shouldn't have to put up with, but actually endure the rubbish in their own head, because the automatic pilot operates on a loop that is fueled by thought. You need to break that chain reaction. You need to ensure that you take control of that to which you are paying attention. Let's go right back to the start of this particular episode. You're waking at 4 in the morning and you're paying attention to God knows what kind of rubbish that is swilling around in your head. Now, by the way, I'm not saying that everything that is swilling around in your head is rubbish and meaningless. You might be stressed at work. Well, that's not true, actually. You might be under pressure at work. It's the thinking that actually makes you believe that you're stressed at work. You might have marital problems, like my friend that I mentioned a few minutes ago. You might have cardiovascular problems, like the other friend that I mentioned. But then again, research has shown over the last 40 years that the vast majority of cardiovascular problems are lifestyle related. And of course, the biggest lifestyle choice that we make every day is whether or not to pay attention to our thoughts. As I said, it's automatic. We pay attention to our thoughts automatically. You're going to have to do something to stop paying attention to your thoughts. And the wonderful thing is, if we do go all the way back to the start of this article and you're scratching your head saying to yourself, well, I've been suffering from disrupted sleep for the last 30 years. Am I going to suffer from dementia or Alzheimer's in later life? And it's a valid question because of the research, as I mentioned earlier on, that shows even a couple of nights of disrupted sleep will lead to the buildup of the fatty proteins that are implicated in longer term cognitive decline, specifically dementia and Alzheimer's. That research showed that even a couple of nights' good sleep would actually wash away the proteins that had built up on the synapses. But there is a far better way of ensuring that you take the kind of action whereby you end up doing things for yourself that will, first of all, undo some of the things that your automatic lifestyle choices might have done to you. And more importantly, enable you live a fuller life, starting straight away, and a more fulfilling life. So it's fuller and fulfilling life as a result of your being in control of your own state of mind. Now, you're never going to be in control of your life. We don't have control of our lives. Look at what's going on in the world at the moment. We could all be obliterated in the twinkle of an eye. We don't have control over our lives. But we have a huge amount of influence over what happens us in our lives once we take control of our state of mind. Let me come back again to the valid question that I referred to a moment ago. You know, if I've been suffering from disrupted sleep for years, is it inevitable that I'm going to suffer from Alzheimer's? Nothing is inevitable in this world. Other than death, of course. We're all only human. We're all, as I said earlier on, we're animals living in a natural environment. Well, we've actually become divorced from the natural environment. And that's why I said to you, for example, that you shouldn't go to sleep with your telephone nearby. But other than death, there is nothing inevitable in this life other than the stuff to which you can set your mind as a result of taking control of your state of mind. We covered this just a couple of weeks ago when I explained to you exactly how to set your mind to achieve your goals and objectives. Now, the precursor to that, and what we're talking about here, is that you take control of your state of mind, because you're not actually going to be able to set your mind in the right direction until you have it under control. It's not under control if you are being abused by your own thoughts. But again, I keep coming back to this because I'm just about to answer this question. What about the possibility of long-term dementia as a result of long-term sleep disruption? Never fear. Don't worry. Don't panic indeed, because not only will the short video that I mentioned earlier on, No More Sleepless Nights, enable you to get a good night's sleep, straight away, by the way, straight away. Recent research has shown that even if your neural pathways were in a mess as a result of you abusing yourself by making the same automatic lifestyle choice every day for 75 years, even if you we're beginning to decline cognitively, which is inevitable, perhaps, with age. It's not inevitable at all, bear with me. Even if you had never taken any real action for yourself and were continually over the years doing things to yourself, to your detriment, recent research has shown that if you started taking control of that to which you are paying attention at 75 years of age and did the little exercise involved every morning for just 8 weeks, your neural pathways would not only have started to restructure themselves, but new neural pathways created from stem cells that actually still exist in 75-year-old brains, new neural pathways would be developed. As a result of which, this little exercise each morning over 8 weeks would enable you reverse the cognitive decline that we thought, and there's a bad word, but that we thought was inevitable as a result of the aging process. In other words, you can meditate yourself younger, neurally younger. Obviously, you can't go back to your youth physically, but neurally, you can undo even the attrition and the loss of cognitive function as a result of the natural aging process. Yes, that little exercise is meditation. Meditation is an exercise in developing your ability to pay attention to the reality of the here and now. That is how we stop paying attention to our thoughts. You don't have to fight off your thoughts. You don't have to go back to your past and revisit why you might have been beating yourself up and making the wrong lifestyle choices automatically for years on end. You don't have to go to a therapist to stand up to the inner critic that actually doesn't exist at all. You don't have to do any of that. As I said right at the beginning of this episode, the things we can do for ourselves are far less effortful, to the point of effortless. Far simpler and oh so much more effective than anything that you might have been doing to yourself for all of your adult life up to this very moment. Regular meditation doesn't just undo cognitive decline. Regular meditation will clean out the buildup of protein in the neural pathways in the brain. Regular meditation will undo all of the detrimental physical effects of regular everyday stress. You see, I need to point this out. We're actually built, as I said earlier on, to ensure that a life-threatening situation has our full attention. And therefore, in a situation like that, the stress response will get us out of danger. So I'm not talking about big stress. I'm talking about everyday stress, little stress that is so little in every day that you actually put up with it. You actually endure stuff that you shouldn't have to put up with at all. It's the little stuff that'll kill you. Why? Because cortisol in your system every day will ensure that your heart rate is elevated, obviously not to the 200 beats a minute that I mentioned earlier on, but that your heart rate is elevated, your blood pressure is up, that LDL, fatty, bad cholesterol, builds up in your cardiovascular system. That's not good. And that as a result of cortisol in your system, your digestive system becomes messed up and your immune system goes down. Doesn't necessarily crash, but you'll pick up any bug that's going if you're suffering from this imaginary stress. All because you're thinking about perhaps the pressure you're under, you're thinking about the problems that you might have, or more to the point, the problems that you think you might have. You mightn't have any problems at all. As my friend that I mentioned right at the beginning of this episode said, I'm worrying in the middle of the night, but I actually don't really have anything to worry about. It's like a client of mine just after I started working for myself in 1996. I'd been talking to him. He'd done actually my very first workshop many, many years ago. And a couple of months later, he rang me and he said, I was tossing and turning all night. I didn't get a single wink of sleep. He said, I was worried all night. I said, you know as well as I know that worry is just this mad state of thinking how things might go wrong, or more to the point, giving your energy to things that you don't want to happen. I said, what were you worrying about? He said, I was worried that I had nothing to worry about. A salutary tale. Actually, it shows how mad the mind is, how crazy this person, the inner critic that doesn't exist, how mad that person actually is, how abusive they are, how abusive you have allowed them be to yourself when in reality they don't exist. You'll realize that once you begin to experience the reality of the here and now. Because so many things happen when you experience the reality of this moment. First of all, and this is kind of amusing, you'll realize how mad everybody is around you. The absolute bonkers behavior of normal crazy people. Secondly, you'll begin to experience a feeling of calm. Now, I know people who have done my free online programs, and there's a free online program going on at the moment if you want to use the link that is in your podcast player. There's a free program going on at the moment, and somebody who's going through that free program emailed me a couple of days ago, and she said, I did the first session of that free program. I did the little exercise, the meditation, after that. And she said, for the first time in my adult life, I felt calm. One meditation, and the meditation is only 7 minutes. One meditation, and she's feeling calm. Once you begin to feel calm, your body's energy will flow in a far calmer way. And once your mind is at ease, the dis-ease that can occur in your body as a result of your mind being ill at ease dissipates, goes away. Like my friend who doesn't have an incurable kidney disease anymore. But that's only the start of it. There are immediate health benefits. We talked about weight loss as well. There are all kinds of immediate health benefits, but the really big benefit of developing your ability to pay attention to the here and now is that you take control of your state of mind. Your state of mind is no longer being jerked here and there by whatever rubbishy thought comes into your head that is thrown at you by the so-called inner critic. By taking control of your state of mind, you can allow your clearer mind move you in the direction that will see you, and I said earlier on, this is an inevitability in life, will see you beginning to experience the stuff that is good for you, will see you beginning to achieve your goals. Let me put it simpler than that. You'll actually begin to experience your life changing in real time. You, like every other person in this world, have the ability to take control of your state of mind. You have the ability to sit down for, as I said a minute ago, only 7 minutes in the morning, every morning or most mornings, to develop your ability to be present in the here and now, to develop your ability to pay attention to the here and now, which of course develops your ability to make the right lifestyle choice. I'm not going to make the automatic lifestyle choice anymore of paying attention to the rubbish in my own head. I'm going to make the right lifestyle choice as a result of making one of the most important lifestyle choices we can all make each day. I'm going to sit down for a few minutes in the morning and develop my ability and further develop my ability and deepen my ability to pay attention to the reality of what my five senses are actually experiencing in this moment. Now, people have said all kinds of things to me, and indeed other people who have been extolling the virtues of meditation over the years. Jon Kabat-Zinn, who is responsible for the development of mindfulness-based stress reduction therapy in conjunction with the University of Massachusetts Medical School in the 1980s, has been assailed by many people over the years who have told him, I can't meditate. And he says, if you can breathe, you can meditate. I got a really funny one from somebody who is actually going through the same free program that I mentioned a minute ago at the moment. She did the first series. She downloaded the little exercise, the little meditation, and I got an email from her saying, I haven't the patience to meditate. Now, all you can do is put your hands up to your face when you hear that kind of nonsense, because this can be done by anybody. And that includes you, regardless of what you might think about meditation. Meditation is an exercise that will enable you to stop thinking, start being, and experience life as it is meant to be experienced in peace, calm, happiness, serenity, and indeed the experience of the flow of all good things.